I just do like a cold open, whatever it's called. Like, I don't like being like, hello, welcome to whatever. But it's nice to be with you today. Ludovic, right?
Yes, Ludovic. Yes.
It's Ludwig. It's from Ludwig, right?
Not exactly. In fact, Ludovic is coming from the Latin. In fact, it's the Latin version of Louis in French. In fact,
oh, okay,
You say Ludovicus. Ludovicus is the Latin version. So this is Ludovic. Okay, but everybody call me Ludo. So you can call me Ludo. It will be easier.
Okay, Ludo. Hey, but there is such a thing called a ludotech, right? Which is something I learned about when I lived in France.
Yes,
so.
Exactly. Ludotech, it's like a bibliotheque, but instead of books, you will find toys.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that amazing? We need to import this idea from the French. This is quite possibly the greatest French idea ever created, a ludotech.
We have many good ideas. You know that, let's say, a French invention that you can find more and more is VAT. You know, tax. It has been invented in France. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate it. I've been following you for a long time, and you had this thread on Nord Stream, and yeah. I realized that I personally know nothing. I mean, I know tiny little bit about it. I've seen a few YouTube videos and obviously read about it, but I think that because I think most people don't know about these really important, I guess how you would describe it. Like, I've been thinking of them as like sinews or muscles or something, like the connecting tissue of our global life. So that countries that are like energy poor or in one way or another, or even in terms of internet too. So there's this whole world underneath us, you know, it keeps us alive in a way. So, this business of Nord Stream is at the heart of all this. So I was thinking maybe you can kind of walk us through what you do. Maybe you can introduce yourself first before we do that, because your background here is relevant to the conversation.
Okay, so my name is Ludovic Leroy. So on Twitter, my Twitter handle is Prince Certitude. Prince Certitude, but let's stick with Ludo. My job, in fact, I'm an engineer, and I am working at the French Petroleum Institute. In France, we don't have oil, but we have ideas. This is what we like to say, in fact. And at the French Petrol Institute, it's a research institute developing technologies for historically oil and gas, but now for all kinds of energy, especially renewables right now. But my specialty, in fact, is rotating equipment, so dealing with pumps, compressor, turbine. And on the top of that, I deal with teaching, training people, because I am training a professional of the oil and gas industry. So training people on the way to operate pipelines, for instance. So that's why I have some, let's say, good basic knowledge of what is a pipeline. And so I did a thread regarding Nord Stream, because we hear a lot about those pipes, and as you said, not so many people know exactly what we are talking about. Okay, everybody knows that we are talking about a pipe, a tube, but it's much more complex, in fact, than a tube. And what is very important today is that most of the news that we can hear about main topics, let's say geopolitics, most of these news are based, in fact, on things that are quite technical, in fact. And to get a good understanding and to get sufficient, let's say, knowledge to analyze all the news that are coming, that are splashing in our face, in fact, nowadays, I think that it's good to get some basic knowledge about those technical things. So that's why I used to pass a bit of time on Twitter to do those kind of thread to give some basics regarding technologies. My specialty is oil and gas, so most of the topics are oil and gas. And so I suggest to explain a little bit about Nord Stream, because this is a hot topic nowadays. So You made a parallel with muscles and nerves. I would say that if we talk about pipelines, either it is for oil or for gas, and now we will talk about gas, it's more something like veins, huh? To transport the blood in your organism. And if you have a look on our society, on our civilization, that's pretty evident that our blood is made of oil and gas. So maybe tomorrow it will be different, but for the moment that's still the case, in fact. So we are talking about energy. Our civilization is based on energy, and one of these energy vectors that is quite used nowadays is gas, natural gas. So you have different ways to use gas, to have gas. If you are lucky enough, you have it under your feet. If you are lucky enough but reluctant to use it, you can have gas under your feet, but you don't want to use it. That's the case for my country, for instance, France. And if you are not lucky, you don't have gas, but you need gas. And for that, you need to transport it from production site to consumer area. To transport it, you have two solutions. You have solutions using pipes, gas pipes. That's the case for Nord Stream. And the other solution that is also a hot topic nowadays is to transport it liquefied by boats, by tankers. We see a huge development of the proportion of liquefied natural gas nowadays. Due to the fact that we have some issues with pipes, because the main disadvantage of pipes is that you cannot move the entry or the outlet of the pipe, the inlet on the outlet of the pipe, so something which is fixed. And when on the other side of your pipe you have Russia, you perfectly understand that nowadays that's an issue. That's why liquefied natural gas is, let's say, booming. Maybe it's not the right word when you're talking about natural gas, but let's say booming.
I wanted to say something.
So that gives you an idea of also safety, yeah, regarding regarding natural gas. So let's talk about Nord Stream. So first of all, when we talk about Nord Stream, so everybody heard about Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2. So obviously, Nord Stream 1 has been built earlier. So roughly 10 years ago, it started to operate 10 years ago. Nord Stream 2 has never been operated, in fact. It has been startup. The war in Ukraine started at the same time, so it never started, in fact. It never started, but it has been filled with gas, and that is important. We'll talk about it later on. One important thing to know is that each of the Nord Stream pipe are composed of two pipes, in fact, two tubes. So why two tubes? Because in fact, the flow rate that is supposed to go through this pipe is very high, in fact, and too high to get it in only one normal pipe. When I say normal, I'm talking about diameter, because we preferred, in fact, to install two relatively small, because we are talking about 48 inches or almost 1.2 meter for European people, pipes. So that's already a big pipe. But if you want to get the full flow in only one pipe, it will be too big and too complex to install, to produce, and so on. So
Wait,
those
pause for a
two
second. I
pipes.
have a question for you. So the 1.2 meters is this is the diameter is which is what measurement?
Yes, it's the inner diameter. Let's say it's pretty big for a pipe, in fact. At the inlet and the outlet of this pipe, you need valves, in fact, to isolate, to shut it off. And those valves are the biggest ever built in the history. So for a pipeline, this is something quite big, in fact. Nord Stream are huge, complex, and big project, in fact. So those two pipes are composed of two pipes. So we are talking about four pipes, in fact. And they are pretty much identical. In terms of diameter, for sure, they are identical. Let's say that their path from Russia to Germany can differ a little bit. And you have to imagine that you have four pipes that are almost in parallel, but the distance between the pipes can change from 20 meters to 3 kilometers, in fact. It will depend on the topography of the seabed, for instance, because you have a lot of peak and valley under the water. And according to this subsea geography, I would say, they adapt, in fact, the path of the pipe. Okay. And it's also important to know that the depth of those pipes is not constant from Russia to Germany. More or less, starting from Russia, it's go down to something like minus 1,000 meter, and then going up and down, climbing steadily over 1,230 kilometer, arriving in Germany. And it go up steadily. And as a remark, the leaks that we have been observing are located on the Germany side, I would say, of the pipe, close to Sweden. And at this point, the depth is in between 80 meters to 40 meters depth. So you see, just to give you an idea, you have to imagine pipes that are going down, up, all the way along the path from Russia to Germany. One other thing that is quite important and not so common is that the pipe on the full path is made of only one section. That is to say that you don't have a valve in the middle to isolate, for instance, the area where you get a leak. It's only one valve at the inlet, one valve at the outlet. One big valve, 200 tons valve in Russia, and the other one in Germany. When I say a valve, per pipe, of course. Every pipe will have is a shutdown valve also. So it's a bit special. And why you have this design? It's more a question of geopolitics than a question of technique. From a technical point of view, it would have been better to get valve shutdown valve in the middle to be able to isolate some sectors, some section of the pipe in case of issue for maintenance. But due to the fact that the countries around those pipes were not all fond of the building of this pipe, it has been difficult to have the green light to get systems that should need to be energized from those countries, from Finland, from Sweden, from Denmark, in case of valve installation, some electrical supply should have been, forecast from those countries, in fact. So as those countries were not all fond of this pipe, because pipelines are also always something very geopolitically oriented. And you are crossing boundaries, you are linking countries that have some, some interest, and not every country around the pipe or on the pipe pass are sharing those interests. And that's the case for Nord Stream, obviously. And we hear a lot of those objections during the pipeline history, pipeline operation for Nord Stream 1, but also the building for Nord Stream 2. We heard a lot of opposition coming from USA dealing with Nord Stream 2. You perfectly understand this geopolitical dimension. And it has an impact on the pipe design. That's why those systems, because I call it systems, because we are talking about a tube, but you have also compressor, you have turbines, you have valves, you have many systems purely technical around it. I like those systems because it's not just a question of science and technique. It's a mix of science, technique, and geopolitics. And Nord Stream is a very good example of this this issue, in fact. So just continuing on the pipe to describe you a little bit more the pipeline. Nord Stream is in fact composed of three different sections, but those sections are not separated by valves that you can close. It's one pipe, but made of three different sections. Because in fact, the pipes, the tubes that are Nord Stream is made of are different. On the Russian side, you get operating pressure that are higher than on the Germany side. Why? Because when you inject a fluid in a pipe, it will lose energy going along the pipe due to the friction you get between gas and the pipe, between gas and the gas itself, or if we are talking about oil, for liquid, is exactly the same. So you enter at a certain pressure, and the pressure will go down and down and down and down due to the friction. And in order to save some money, what they did is that they put thicker pipes at the inlet than at the outlet. So in fact, you have three different sections, and those three different sections has been made in three steps, in fact. In order to build the pipe, you have to weld tubes, those big tubes. And those, once you weld it, you put it in the sea and you let it go down to on the seabed. I make it very simple because we are talking about hundreds of tons of materials to get down in some area at minus 1,000 meters. Nothing is simple, in fact. But to make it simple, you had tubes and tubes and tubes, you weld it, and then it goes down to the sea. And this will be done on a kind of boat. It's a mix of boat and oil platform, in fact, offshore oil platform. It's a small factory, floating factory, where you will weld the pipe and let it down, and you will lay down the pipe like you are laying down a cable, in fact. So maybe you have you have been talking about it in the introduction before starting the recording. We have been talking about cables, optical fibers, electric cables that are laid down on the seabed. It's exactly the same thing. The difference is that we are talking about very heavy parts, stiffer part, and tubes that we need to weld together, in fact. Each tube is a little bit more than 12 meters long, and we have 1,230 kilometer long pipe. So I let you do the calculation for the number of tubes. It's obviously a huge number of tubes. So you have three different tubes. The one on the Russia side are, in terms of steel thickness, a little bit more than 40 millimeters. And the one on the Germany side, which is designed to operate at lower pressure due to the pressure drop you get along the pipe, has a thickness close to 30 millimeters. That's a good way to save money, I would say. But that is to say that this pipe cannot be operated in the opposite direction. A pipe like this will have one direction. In any case, gas is produced in Russia and it will be consumed in Germany. So there is no reason, in fact, to go on the opposite way. But most of the time, people are asking questions like this, can we use it on the other side? No, it's not just as simple. The design, if it's not set at the design step, it won't be easily done, in fact. A pipe like Nord Stream, for instance, if you want to operate it on the horizontal direction, you need to rebuild the full length of pipe, okay?
And besides, what are the Germans going to send anyways? Bratwurst? Come on, there's nothing to send to Russia from Germany. Germany doesn't have anything that Russia needs.
Oh yeah, but you know, we a lot of silly things, you know, due to the energy transition. A lot of people are talking about, especially in Europe, are talking about hydrogen, green hydrogen, and many projects are planning to use the natural gas network, piping network, to make hydrogen exchange. And that's not so easy because most of the pipe have preferred direction, in fact. So let's stop about hydrogen and stick back to Nord Stream. So regarding the tube, so we have been talking about metallic, so carbon steel tubes, which is more or less, I would say, classic steel. We won't put in seawater, salty water, naked classic carbon steel pipes due to corrosion. And this corrosion topic will be very important to understand the future of Nord Stream pipes, in fact, after the what we call, what today we can talk about attack on this pipe, because we know that's a sabotage. So those pipes are mostly made of steel, but to protect it against corrosion from coming from the seawater, so from the external side of the pipe, this pipe is protected by polyethylene sheet, which is more or less glued to the surface of the pipe. And this polyethylene sheet protecting the pipe against corrosion, so it's something quite thin, and we're talking about less than 1 meter. No, it should be something like when we take the adhesive polyethylene film, something like few millimeter, I would say, 2 to 4 millimeter, to protect from the corrosion. And this film will be also coated with concrete, and you get 10 centimeters of concrete around the pipe. So this concrete is made for several reasons. The first reason, it is to make the pipe heavy. Of course, we have a big volume filled with gas which is lighter than water. And if you want to have this pipe sticking to the seabed and not floating, then you need to make it heavy. So that's why we put concrete around it. That's one reason, to make it heavy and to get a good stability of the pipe on the seabed. On the top of that, it's also a kind of shell, a protection shell against external aggression. Like, for instance, we can talk about fishing nets that can damage some pipes, some cable also. You can talk about anchors from the boat that can damage the pipe. So at the end, we get a pipe with a thickness of almost 40 millimeter, then a few millimeter of plastic to protect it against corrosion, and then 10 centimeter of concrete. So at the end, you get something that is quite strong, not something you will damage hitting a hammer on it. Okay, that is to say, if you want to damage it, you will need a certain quantity of explosive. I'm not a specialist in explosive. I won't give an estimation. I have some information I get from internet, from people knowing better than me about explosive. But we have been talking about hundreds of kilograms of explosive to damage, destroy the pipe locally. Something very strong. Right? You cannot damage it with a fishing net or so on. That's why when the leak occurs, the hypothesis of an accident has been quite quickly put away, in fact. It has been quite obvious that it was, an attack, not an accident. And surely using explosive. Okay, what kind of explosive, I don't know. Coup, I don't know. But this is for sure that has been a sabotage. So Now let's talk about how to move the gas inside the pipe, huh? Because the gas won't travel from Russia to Germany naturally. Huh? So to push this gas inside the pipe, you need to pressurize it, and this will be done with compressor. And those compressors are driven by gas turbine, which are almost, if you don't know what is a gas turbine, maybe everybody has seen a jet engine, a plane engine, and that's exactly the same. You have a lot of gas turbine used in the oil and gas industry that are in fact are exactly the same model you will find on a Boeing 747, for instance. Okay, so those gas turbine are driving compressor, so rotating equipment, and those compressor will increase the pressure of gas and push the gas from the inlet to the outlet. In the case of Nord Stream, you only has one compression station located in Russia, and the gas will travel along the pipe without being recompressed, like so in some design you can see, but mostly it will be on land pipeline, not marine pipeline, and so going to Germany like this. And those machines are very big machines. You have a plane reactor driving a compressor. So you can imagine we are talking about machines having a power of more than 10 to 20 megawatt. Yeah, so it's big babies, I would say. I'm dealing with machines. And for me, we are, let's say, at the top limit in terms of size regarding what I am knowing. Regarding rotating equipment, so those compressor will push the gas to Germany, and you maybe you heard about Nord Stream 1. Russia has been complaining a lot, so I cannot tell you if it is reality or not. But Russia used those turbine and the sanction. Which is leading to issues for the turbine maintenance because those turbines are maintained in Canada, and those machines request maintenance with a certain frequency, I would say. And Russia at least use this argument to stop Nord Stream 1, and it has been stopped in end of August, if I am right. So that is to say that when the Nord Stream 1 has been hit, the pipe was stopped. Nord Stream 2 was commissioned but has never been started. Okay, so both pipes, so four tubes, were filled with gas, natural gas, maybe a bit of nitrogen in Nord Stream 2 due to the fact of the startup procedure and so on. I'm not sure, but I'm, let's say, 50% sure that maybe you have a mix of natural gas and nitrogen in Nord Stream 2. But the pipe is, let's say, inflated with gas, those four pipes. But the gas was steady in it. No gas flow. Just you can imagine a pipe which is plugged on both sides, filled with gas, pressurized at 105 bar. Normal operation pressure is 220 at the inlet and 174 bar at the outlet. Sorry, I cannot translate it into PSI by just like this live. I'm a poor European guy. I'm using bar for pressure. But anyway, so the pressure in the pipe was almost, let's say,
170, 174. You say 174 bar. That's
yeah.
2,000, wow, holy shit.
Yes.
2,523 PSI.
Yes, you just have to multiply it by 14.5. Yes.
Wow. That's like, this
Okay.
is like a, I like listening to you, like, this is an accomplishment. This is like a monumental feat of human, like, engineering, what you're saying. Like,
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
this
yeah.
is like a, I mean, like, not like this, this is like godlike, like, powers in terms of what you're achieving, and the fact that people can just like some force out there, obviously the Americans, could just like blow it up like it's like like it's nothing. Like it's amazing. It's like you're blowing up some amazing achievement. I mean, you are blowing up an achievement, just like what this technology represents. I mean, it's like,
yes, talking about technology, but also if we talk about figures, each Nord Stream, it's $8 billion.
Yeah,
$8 billion. And if you take into account,
it's like a jugular vein, jugular.
For Europe, yes. For Europe, for Germany especially, yes, it has been a jugular vein, yes. And for sure, it will have an impact on the German economy. So the parallel with the jugular vein is quite good. I'm not saying that Germany will die, because obviously we have two jugular veins. So if you have one that is blocked, then you can still use the other one. Maybe you won't be 100% operational, but you are not dying. And that's the case, what we are seeing. What is the second jugular vein? Let's say mostly it will be natural liquefied gas, liquefied natural gas, LNG. Okay. And most of this LNG will come from the US. Okay, so the other jugular vein is in a certain proportion US for Europe today. Well, it's a bit more complex than this, but because we can buy LNG from other countries. China also supplied LNG coming from Russia, but you know, right, that's the game of geopolitics, and you can change the color of your gas according to administrative topics, I would say. But let's stick back to the technology, which is my side, I would say. So yes, we were talking about this pressure. So you are right, and to pass from bar to PSI, you need to multiply by 14.5. To get the result, and you did it. So yes, it's a huge pressure. That's explaining also the thickness of the pipe. Thickness of the pipe is calculated according to difference of pressure between inside and outside, and according to also the stiffness you want to have, according to the external aggression that can occur, and also to deal with corrosion, because even if you protect it against corrosion, engineers are always taking a margin thinking about corrosion, because corrosion will grind a little bit your material. It will remove some thickness, so you put additional thickness to take into account the fact that you will have corrosion, especially on a pipe, because those pipes are designed to be operated for 40, 50, 60 years, okay? And as you can imagine, doing maintenance on a pipe that is located on a seabed, according to the depth, it's not something easy, okay? It's something very complex, in fact, okay? I heard on the internet many people saying, oh, that's easy, you just need to cut, you just need to plug the hole, and no, nothing is easy, nothing is easy. It is very complex. Repairing a pipe like this will be even much more complex than building it. Okay? Because building, to make it simple, you take pipes, you make it sink on the seabed. It's I say it very simply, in fact. If you want to repair it, you need to go down, cut a piece, remove it, then make sinking a new one, weld it under the water. So very complex. Okay, that's why maybe we'll discuss it a little bit after. My feeling regarding repairing this pipe, let's say that for me, my opinion, personal opinion, probability is almost zero. Okay, because it's very complex, because it will be very costly, and who will invest nowadays in a pipe linking Europe to Russia? I'm sure nobody. Okay, that's why I'm pretty sure that the pipes have been definitely damaged, in fact. Let's talk about those damage. So what we have seen first, Germany has seen that the pressure inside the pipe has been dropping. I told you the pipes were inflated at 105 bars, and they saw that the pressure dropped from 105 to 7 bar very quickly. So pretty sure that you get a leak, yeah? Because I remind you that those pipes are plugged on both sides by the shutoff valve, and you get a fixed volume in the middle. So as soon as you see the pressure dropping, you know that the gas is flowing outside. So we call it a leak. And in the morning after the leak detection, Sweden or Denmark Navy, I think it's Sweden, has been observing those bubbles at the surface. Maybe you have seen the picture. Big circles, 1 kilometer diameter, with white water, with bubbles flowing in the middle. So that was the occasion to see where the leak was located. So to make it simple, 2 leaks on Nord Stream 1 on both pipes, located offshore of Sweden. Those two pipes leak on Nord Stream 1. The distance between the two leaks is something like 3 kilometers. And 75 kilometers south, you get the leak from Nord Stream 2. Because on Nord Stream 2, only one pipe has been damaged. So seeing that distance, the conclusion about an accident was direct. No, this is not an accident with the anchor of a boat that has been grinding, in fact, the seabed. 75 kilometers, you cannot imagine this. So that was pretty obvious that something which is not an accident occurred. So on the top of that, after that, I know that seismograph in Sweden has been detecting explosion. An explosion equivalent to 100 kilograms of TNT source, I would say. Because the Seismograph Institute in Sweden is quite used to observe explosion coming from military exercises. And what they said that normally the Swedish Navy is warning that some exercise will happen. And so this time there was no exercise, and the curve on the seismograph were quite equivalent to explosive, in fact, underwater explosion. So everything point in the direction of explosion on the pipe. I heard also on internet some hypothesis saying that maybe Russians have sent pigs. Why pigs? Not the animal, in fact. Pig is a tool, an apparatus that we send inside the pipe to clean it and also to monitor it. We call it intelligent pig. In fact, those pigs, you can imagine something like, I don't know, a train, a kind of train that is traveling inside the pipe that will clean it to remove the dirt you can have in it, for instance.
But wait, stop for a second. You're telling me that inside of this massive pipeline that carries gas, you're telling me that they send little robots that look like trains to go inside and clean it? Like, is this, do you guys live in like a cartoon world? Like, is this like for real? Like, I can't even imagine that. And you call them pigs?
Yes, we call it pigs, yeah. Using this word is not my decision, you know.
There must be cameras on these things then.
You can have. You have. In fact, you have plenty of apparatus. You have, especially, you have apparatus that are dedicated to detect leaks. So it's acoustic detection. You have apparatus that are sending ultrasonic waves to have a look to detect a crack in a pipe. So every year, they stop the pipe, they stop pipe operation. They introduce a pig in it. So this apparatus, okay? It's, let's say, something like 2 to 3 meters long, yeah, with exactly the same diameter of the pipe, okay? And you have all those sensors on it. And then you push this pig with the gas. So that is to say that you are the intelligent pig is not... as on wheels, huh, to go in, to travel in the pipe, it will be pushed by the gas, okay? And it will travel from Russia to Germany at a speed close to 1 meter per second, okay? And then it will come back to Russia by the road or by plane. That's quite funny, yeah, isn't it?
Wait, why not say? Oh, because you can't send the gas the other way.
Exactly. Hey, yeah, right. you are a good student, I would say.
You're a very good professor.
Thank you. So some people have been saying that maybe the Russians have used those kind of pigs with explosive to make it explode from the inside. But as I told you, to make it travel along the pipe, you need to push it with gas. If you have gas pushing, that is to say you have gas going outside on the Germany side. And we know that there is no flow. The gas is steady inside the pipe. So this hypothesis has to be rolled out, in fact. For me, it's an external attack. Okay, who did it? This is not my field of competency. Okay, we are talking about geopolitics. Who did it? I don't know. You can make different hypotheses: U.S., Russia, or somebody else. Okay, so I won't go on this side. I have no conclusion on this side. Some are more obvious than others. This is yes, my personal opinion. But you know, obvious things are not always the right thing. nowadays. Okay, so that is to say, we are perfectly sure that we are talking about sabotage, and from the external side. So let's say explosive. That has been put by coup, I don't know, by submarines, I don't know. This is not my side, but for sure it has been a sabotage. What else regarding Nord Stream?
Well, I mean, if I can ask though, is that like, is this a moment? I can't help but make an analogy to Stuxnet and what Stuxnet in retrospect, after everything that happened, Stuxnet is the attack by, you know, combined American Israeli services to, that was like the specially designed virus that was, So, well, for people who don't know, that began a kind of era. I mean, people use this analogy, Pandora's box, and it's a tired analogy, but it works because after that, you start seeing now digital warfare is a standard tactic. I guess my question is, and I guess this is a geopolitical question, could this be like the Stuxnet moment? Like, is this Pandora's box opening? Because like what you're telling me is that like this huge long pipeline, like it's open, it's sensitive. You can hit it if you want to. And even hitting it once has almost knocked it out permanently, what you're saying. So, you know, is the next level, you know, the sensitivity, the technical sense, like the complexity of these things that we have, like they're very sensitive to attack. So that really, like, the engineering is sound. It's more the problems are geopolitical now that we can't have these things.
Yeah. In fact, eating an energy infrastructure is not so common, especially an infrastructure that is so sensitive like Nord Stream. Maybe that's the first time in history that such a thing occur, in fact. Exploding pipelines or pumping station, we have seen it. For instance, Houthi in Saudi Arabia, they have been trying and they succeed to hit one pumping station in Saudi Arabia. But here we are talking about, something very critical for Europe. And the goal of the people that has been doing it is to smash mind of everybody in Europe, maybe, about how sensitive are our energy infrastructure. Because right now we are talking about a big, solid thing that is Nord Stream. But in the vicinity of Nord Stream, in North Sea, in the Baltic, you get other pipes. I'm thinking about pipes in Norway, We get also cables, optical fibers. And so we are talking about internet. We are talking about electricity exchange between countries. Everything is interconnected. And once you hit it, this is something big. And what has been done with Nord Stream, because those pipes were not operating. So it doesn't shut down something, in fact. They were not operating. Okay, and maybe the idea is to show how sensitive it is. Maybe the idea is to show, look what we are able to do, and let's think about the other area where the other infrastructure that can be hit. And for sure, right now, Europe is relying a lot on, I told about LNG, so liquefied natural gas coming from the US, but also we are supplied, I say we because I'm European, we are supplied by Norway, by pipe, and those pipes are in North Sea. And what we can see here, we are talking about the Baltic Sea. The Baltic Sea is not the area in the world that is the less observed, I would say. Okay, you have a lot of military activity all around here. I can imagine that you have a lot of Russian submarine observation made by you know, the P-8 plane from the US, which is specialized in this. And on the, we saw that one of these planes was circling in the area just at the moment of the second explosion, I guess. So maybe they sent a plane there to look for something. And we know that it has been circling during the second explosion. So they have seen at least the leak appearing because, you know, you have different websites where you can track those plane, and you see that there is a coordination, I would say. There were one P-8 plane from the U.S. Navy in the area at the time of the second explosion. The second explosion was on NS2, Nord Stream 2, I think.
I'm sure that was just a coincidence.
let's say that it is a coincidence. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. Maybe they were there because they wanted to find the people that were doing it, or maybe they were there to monitor their people. I don't know. Okay, I don't know. But let's say what I wanted to do to say is that this area is something that is very, very observed by different countries. Military, you have a lot of military assets in the area, Baltics, North Sea, and we see that such an important infrastructure can be hit. And for the moment, we don't know, at least public doesn't know, but we don't know who did it. Okay, and for Nord Stream, we are talking about four tubes, so two pipes that were very important for Germany, quite important for Russia also. And today, in my opinion, they are destroyed. NS1 is fully destroyed, and I'm pretty sure it will never be repaired. And NS2, one of the two pipes has been destroyed, so the capacity of NS2 is 50% of what it was, okay? So this is something big. This is something big. Why I say it won't be repaired? Because I did not cover the topic for the moment. Let's go back to technique. But once you get all in a pipe, all the gas will go down. The pressure is decreasing from 105 bar, decreasing and decreasing. So you get a spray of gas, a huge spray of gas going outside of the pipe. And once the pressure in the pipes becomes equal to the pressure on the seabed, so it's balanced between the two sides of the pipe wall, then you will get the water, due to the fact that water is heavier than gas, flowing down in the pipe. So you get seawater that is flowing inside the pipe. And as the pipe has been obliterated, riser on a top depth, I would say, it has been hit between 40 to 80 meters. And I told you that in some area is going down to 1,000 meters. That is to say that all this length of the pipe will be filled with salty water. And this salty water will generate corrosion inside the pipe. And the inside of the pipe is not designed to handle this corrosion, in fact. And this is a big issue. And this is why I can tell you that I'm almost, let's say, 99% sure that the pipe will never be repaired, because when we talk about repairing the pipe, it's not just sticking an adhesive, a duct tape on it. We are talking about changing the tubes. You know, the tubes that has been very that was very complicated to install on a seabed, the welding, and so on. Changing it is almost, I won't say impossible, but that will be a first in the history on such a big pipe, on such a length. And I remind you that we are talking about something close to Russia. And nowadays, I don't see anybody investing money in such an infrastructure linking Germany to Russia. It's almost impossible.
So like this was an act of pure malevolence. Whoever did this, like wanted to create chaos for Europe. More for Europe, because this hurts both, like obviously Europe and Russia and Germany, especially as you said. But Russia like hurts the least out of all this. Let me put it that way. Like this hurts Europe way more, because all of that. Like you're going, I mean, it's crazy. Like I'm just like, I'm realizing now, like this is so big that it doesn't even matter who did it now. Like it doesn't even matter. Like that's a footnote to all of this, because after this, like I was thinking, what's the famous French Revolution? What is the Louis the 14th or 16th? One of the Louis said, after me, yeah, the floods. like that's what it feels like. That like this is the water is going into the pipeline, like as we speak, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So it's done. Like I'm kind of like saying out loud like how sobering this is, because I didn't realize what this meant. Cause you're like, oh, they can fix it, they can fix anything these days. But holy shit, like holy fucking shit. Like that's crazy what you're describing. Like this is like they stabbed the jugular of a continent, and they're like, people are like the last 5 days. I mean, it's crazy. This is one social cue of what's happening. The last 5 days on my TikTok, I've been seeing pictures of this is how you put, you turn a candle and a ceramic pot and a washer into a heater. Like people are thinking they can heat their homes with ceramic pots and tea lights. Like is like the chaos has already started.
This is something, maybe some people are exaggerating, and maybe not, in fact, because when we talk about gas, everybody thinks about heating, but for Germany, for instance, it's something very important for their industry, to build cars, to build machines, to build steel pipe, so that's a huge thing, in fact. They have lost one way to feed their industry, and everybody knows about the German industry, the strong German industry. But we are not talking anymore about the strong German industry. This is very worrying for Germany. And something which is worrying for Germany is worrying for Europe. You know, because Germany, if you take France and Germany, those two countries are the core of the European Union from an economical point of view, and the core of European Union has been hit with this. So whoever did that wanted to make the history. In fact, it's not just a tactical thing; it's a strategical thing, really.
So yeah, it's world historic, world's historic moments that we just like live through.
Yeah.
It's very funny that like Iran was in the news. I can't help but think that like some social unrest, like something that happens a lot in a lot of countries, and especially in the past, and will happen more in the future. But like this event was like, oh, there's a leak. Like, oh, I think there was an explosion, and we're like, holy shit! Like, there's an explosion. But like, we're in a new era of human history. Like this isn't going to be how this is going to be how it is. And like, and then even now, forget the new era, the like, what was it? I just read 35% of all the gas that they get from Europe came from get from Russia came from Nord Stream, right? Like that's like what no, and what. Go ahead.
In fact, you just have only one Nord Stream. You have also, and this is why Nord Stream 2 is existing. In fact, you have some gas coming from land by pipe from Russia going through Ukraine, for instance. Okay, Ukraine. And Nord Stream 2 was a way to bypass Ukraine for Russia. That's why Nord Stream 2 has been a lot. See, I've seen a lot of objection from US, for instance. Okay, so you have other pipes also, but most of the pipes coming from Russia are stopped. And over days, you still have some gas going through Ukraine, but that's it. And the only way to replace it, and we cannot replace it. Okay, we cannot replace 100% of the Russian gas we got. Because the world capacity is not set for that. But we try to replace it with liquefied natural gas. And what is, this is my opinion, horrible. What is horrible is that suddenly we stop getting gas from Russia, either because we decided to get rid of Russian gas, or either because we are obliged due to the fact that Russians stop the export, or due to the fact that those pipes are damaged today. We have been buying a lot of liquefied natural gas on the market, making the price increasing. And some countries like Pakistan, some countries like Bangladesh, hasn't been able to pay for this gas due to the fact that Europe was getting all the gas. And from a human point of view, this is something terrible. Because during the summer, 30% of Pakistan has been cut off from the electrical network grid due to the fact that not enough gas was feeding Pakistan, because Pakistan is using gas to produce electricity. So you see that the impact of this is global. This is global. And really, it's opposing civilizations, in fact. Okay? So Europe has been ready to pay a lot to maintain a certain level of comfort, what we call a so-called level of comfort. And but what we don't say here in Europe, we don't say that, okay, our politics are very good because they have been able to maintain this supply of gas, whatever happened in with the war. But we did it, not, let's say, stealing to other, okay? Because we have been buying gas that were supposed to go to Bangladesh or Pakistan, which are not able today to buy it due to the fact that the price has been booming. So really, it's not just a question of pipes. Once you are talking about energy infrastructure, it's never a question of technique. You know, the engineer I am is able to give you some information regarding technique, but what you have behind this technique, in fact, it's to better understand all the other things and techniques that are much more complex and much more eating humanity, in fact.
I mean, it's amazing. Like this, forget the like vitalness of it, like even as like an object of like engineering feat, like just four nothing, you know, robots or whatever they use to like attach the explosives, like that's all it took, or not four, however many, like just a few of them. Like it's like a grenade that was able to take down a whole building, or forget a building, like a block, you know. Mm-hmm. And that block was the center of like a huge chunk of like the economic production of like not just a country or two countries, but an entire continent. Like, yeah. and a continent that like, yeah, that's it's this has been a very sobering conversation.
Ludovic. Yeah. I'm sorry.
We're all fucked.
We are fighting.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, I think it's not a coincidence that I live in Canada. We produce all of our energy needs. I mean, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not, and it's cheap relatively. It's very cheap. I mean, we don't think of it as that. It is expensive for our lives, but in terms of the global scale and the experience and like what energy means, like our dependence level on energy is also very high because of our northern climate. So like, I feel that like it didn't, I'm insulated from this event, right? Mm-hmm. But like, that's actually like a false confidence, I feel, because like we, our economies are all linked, and the systems, like the German engineering firms that can't produce the if Siemens can't produce whatever, like it produces, if the big German end can't produce, like, what does that mean for the future of this Canadian power generation company? Like, just a small thing like that, but like, that's like a ripple effect will continue, and this will be felt like forever. And then there's the Pandora's box element of the geopolitical, that like, who's to stop people from doing this in the future now? And like, maybe are we going to reach a time in like the near future when we just can't have these things, an underwater pipeline, because it takes too much geopolitical cooperation, that like, there are like these malevolent forces on this planet that just like won't let us have nice things, like a pipeline that like keeps people warm and like keeps economies going. Like, I'm like at a loss for words, you know, for what's happening. And I don't know, I guess it's just dawned on me how serious this is.
Look how sensitive mankind is, in fact. And we have been developing this sensitive fact. Look, today, and that's my case, through my smartphone, I have everything. Emails, money, communication, everything. Just imagine 5 minutes that due to a lack of electricity, all the antennas will shut down, in fact. Then no email, no money. Okay, go. When I go to buy my bread, I'm French, I'm buying baguette. I use my phone because my credit card is loaded on the phone. But if I don't have network and so on, nothing. Okay, we are very sensitive. Everything is connected. Okay, our world is connected, and we are very proud of the fact that our world is connected. I can discuss with a guy in Canada, you see, and but it's all dependent on energy. So if you are eating the energy network, it's not just energy that is smashed, but it's our way of living also that is smashed.
Oh boy, well, that's a good serious way to end. I want to thank you, Ludovic. That was very, very compelling, very illuminating. You explained everything very clearly like that.
Thank you.
And I appreciate your time. Can you tell us, like what you told, I mean, I'm going to link to your Twitter, but, you know, do you have any projects coming up that we would want to be interested? Do you ever write anything more than Twitter threads? Like, what are you up to that we can, that I can promote?
my project, surviving after a discussion like this, surviving, my friend.
Yeah, no, that's the future.
No, but I will continue on Twitter to try to give tools for people to understand this fucking world that is very complex, in fact. Okay, even for a guy like me, a bit educated on technical and scientific things, I find this world very complex, too many news and so on, and to be able to analyze a little bit what we are seeing and just not relying on what people are trying to convince us, I think it's quite important to get some technical things like this to make it simple for people. So I will continue this, so you can say that. Let's follow me if you get some explanation. Sorry, because most of my tweets are in French, but with a translation tool, that should be okay. And also, sorry for my French accent during 1 hour. I'm sorry for that.
No, it's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.